Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being here with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joined this hour by Trent Horn, one of our favorite guys around here, Trent Horn. And he apparently writes a book about once a week. It's not quite that often, but you have put out quite a few books. What are we up to now? Let me guess. Seven.
That's right, yeah.
You must have said it at some point. I must have heard you say it at some point.
I think it is seven books at this point.
I think it is.
Who says I think it is seven books? Well, I don't keep pictures of my books in my wallet like they're children and, you know, remember each day they were published as some kind of birthday or something. I'm very proud of that work and mostly of how God has used it to bless people and taking a humble guy like me, you know, take somebody like me to go and write something that has really benefited people. It's, I don't know. It's placed, I'm very grateful that the works that I've written have helped people. It's also, it's just a lot of awe to see that, you know, God would choose to use you in some way. And then you think about who you really are. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like when Moses told God, you're like, you got the wrong candidate for this job.
Yeah.
You know, I put my resume in the wrong box. You feel that way sometimes. And yet but as I often say, God does not call the equipped. He equips the called. And he asks anybody listening here, I believe God has called you in one way or another, either to do something good for his kingdom or to come to know him in his kingdom, to know him for all eternity. And so that's why we're talking to people today. We're asking them, you know, why are you religious? Why aren't you religious? If you are not a religious person, I would enjoy talking to you about that. And we'll just have an easygoing conversation and find out why that is. Though we did have an interesting caller who did not make it onto the air, Cy, who brought up a point. I think Marie told you about it earlier before the show started. He said, actually, the problem was I keep saying Christianity is a religion, and he disagreed with that.
Okay.
So, we see this sometimes. My Protestant friends will bring this up. I remember, actually, my very first video creation that I made when it comes to doing Catholic apologetics was a video. I think it was back in 2012, 2011. Do you remember there was this video from this gentleman? It was called "I Hate Religion, But I Love Jesus."
I remember that.
Yeah, and it got shared all over the internet. So I made one of the earliest response videos to that, and that actually got shared a fairly decent amount. I remember I cut my own birthday party short to go home, set up my big Canon XL2 camera. And I wrote my own
That's a little easier for you because nobody comes to your birthday party, right? You don't have to send anybody home.
Well, I still had to. My action
had to turn off the TV.
My action figures had to go back in their okay. in the trunk, in their plastic sleeves to keep them safe.
So
then I went home, wrote that viral video, went out there. This guy saying, and we hear this all the time: Christianity is not a religion; it's a relationship.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, why can't it be both? What's wrong with something being a religion?
Yeah.
Some people think religion is just an arbitrary series of rules and rituals that you just kind of jump through these hoops to get to God. And I agree that some religions could be like that.
Right.
But if you want to make a definition, what is a religion? Even anthropologists and sociologists have a hard time defining what a religion is. Is Zen Buddhism a religion? Because it doesn't necessarily believe in a supreme being, but at the same time, it seems different than a lot of other philosophies. It's a lot more transcendent in its thinking. It feels very religious. Religion, I define it this way. Religion is just man's response to God or man's response to the divine, you know, transcendent other order. But for shorthand, man's response to the ultimate might be a way I would put it. The ultimate, mm-hmm. usually for most people, is God. That's just man's response. And as Christians, we don't believe religion's a bad thing, like we should only have a relationship with Jesus and not practice religion. That's nowhere in the Bible at all. In fact, the Bible upholds religion as being a good thing. If you read in James chapter 1, James 1, 25 through 27, here's what it says. He who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer that forgets, but a doer that acts, he shall be blessed in his doing. So James is talking about how you can't just believe things. You got to also your actions have to line up with that. So he goes on and he says, if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, this man's religion is in vain. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God and the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." So the Bible is saying religion is a good thing if you're living out religion correctly, if you're responding to God by loving God and loving your neighbor who's created in the image and likeness of God.
Yeah.
So it's not either or. It's not, and rituals that we practice, they're not arbitrary. They're the very things Jesus gave us for salvation, such as pouring water over ourselves and baptism, being sealed with the oil of confirmation. Even people who listen who are not religious, they have ritual elements in their lives. They probably get together with friends and family on holidays. Maybe they blow out birthday candles on a birthday cake. These are all actions we do to symbolize things that really matter to us. So if ritual or rules are things that hold you back, you have that everywhere in life. If you have religion that is a good thing, you'll have it there too. There's nothing wrong with that.
888-318-7884 is the number. I'm only kidding about Trent's birthday party too. Thousands of people come to Trent's annual birthday party.
Trentapalooza.
Trentapalooza.
Then after 10 p.m. it's Trent Unplugged.
That's sad when it becomes Trent Unplugged. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you are not a religious person, we welcome your call. 888-318-7884. Nick, do you know what it is that Trent forgot to do last hour? He forgot to kill me. Usually at some point when he's talking about morality with people, he will kill me off, and he didn't do it. He talked about Hitler. He did the whole thing, but he never killed me. You still have an hour left, I guess.
Oh, we've got time. We have time.
Brian in New Mexico watching on YouTube. Thanks for watching on YouTube, Brian. Why are you not religious?
Hi, everybody. Sorry about my voice. I've been practicing singing this weekend, and it's a little bit hoarse. I'm not religious because I find that religion is teaching people that just being human is broken. And then there's this mind game going on of teaching people from birth that they can never be good enough. But to fix that, you're indoctrinated into an organization that says, we will teach you to love yourself even though inherently you're broken and there's nothing you can do about that. And I find that very distasteful.
Why do you find it distasteful that, let's take Christianity, for example, that teaches very simply, we don't live the way that we should? Don't you think most people feel that when they feel guilty about hurting others? That seems to be very uncontroversial.
That's not really what I'm talking about there. I'm talking about just being human. Yes, we fail each other back and forth because that might be because there's other circumstances going on. And when we learn later on, but through our actions, of how it was, what the effects were, we didn't intend that, or we didn't know that was going to be an outcome. So we can apologize to the person that was affected by that, but they should also understand that that wasn't intentional. If it was intentional, then we can take them through the legal process.
Well, Brian, sometimes don't we hurt other people not because we made a mistake? Like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that that was going to hurt you. I agree. Sometimes we might cause harm to others through a mistake, like, oh, I didn't know that was wrong, or I didn't know that that would hurt you. But don't you think in most cases when we hurt one another, it's because we were just being selfish? We cared more about our interests in that moment over theirs, or we just didn't feel bad about doing something that would hurt that other person? Do you think all wrongdoing is simply a mistake, or sometimes we just hurt others?
I think that teaching people that no matter what you do is not going to be good enough, that thought crime is going to be a sin against the deity.
Brian, where does Christianity teach? I don't understand that phrase. No matter what you do is not good enough. Good enough for what? What do you mean?
Good enough to be in the good graces of the deity, the one that is judging you on what is right and wrong. Because it's like the deity is coming to the child going, if you could be a perfect person, then you can go past Peter into the keys of heaven. But the kid's looking at them going, I'm a human being. Why don't you come to me as a human being with proper standards of what a human being can actually do and hold me accountable to that.
Brian, isn't that exactly what Christianity teaches, that God has become a human being and given us things that we can do, such as having faith in him, learning his moral law, asking God to give us his grace so that it empowers us? The Christian faith, the Catholic Church, does not teach that human beings must be morally perfect in every single thing that they do in order to please God. The Bible itself says that the righteous man stumbles seven times a day. The question is, will we let God into our lives so we have that relationship with him, so that we are connected to God by his gift of his very life to us, so we become more and more like him in this life, prepared for the next life? Christianity just doesn't teach that. I mean, if you think of it this way, if you were to go to God and say, let me, I want to spend eternity with you, like even to say, I want heaven, I want perfect eternal happiness, on what merits could you demand that, to spend eternity with a perfect God if you're not perfect?
Well, I would first want to know the character of this deity, even know if I want to have a relationship with it, because according to you guys, even your devil was able to analyze the character of the deity and figure out that, no, that's not a person that I want to have a relationship with because of its character. And so I think everybody should have that power to at least... Now we're kind of getting into, is this, are you an atheist or are you a religious person? Because you can be an atheist and a religious person, but if you believe in the existence of a deity, that's completely separate on whether or not if you actually want to have a relationship with it.
Okay.
But the deity is coming across as saying, let me into your life, and I'll sit there and go, okay, let me know about you. What happens if I don't let you in my life? Well, I need to be in your life so that I can protect you from what I'll do to you if you don't let me into your life. I don't want to be spoken to that way, and I don't want to have a relationship with someone who speaks to me that way.
Well, I think, Brian, that we, and maybe we've spoken about this before, this conversation seems a little bit familiar. I think you and I agree that human beings, we ought to be a certain way, but we always seem to fall short of that. You can call it sin, you can call it a mistake, but I think there's a big difference that we make mistakes all the time. I mean... If I fill out a math test, if I do a test in my math class and I end up getting an 85%, I've made some mistakes, but I haven't done anything wrong, immoral, or sinful. But if I turn in that math test and I did so by cheating, by looking at my neighbor, even if I get 100%, so I haven't made any mistakes in the test, I've done something wrong there. So would you agree there's a difference between mistakes and sins?
I believe that we wrong each other, and because we're not perfect and we empathize with another human being because we understand the limitations of another human being, we come to each other as human beings with the expectations of what human beings can do. This deity isn't doing that. It's coming to us as going, you need to be more than human to even pass the test. Otherwise, you have, and by that fault, you have to let me in for you to even be considered to get past the keys of Peter
Brian,
into heaven, because you can't even do this as a human being yourself.
Right.
So therefore, it's mandatory
but
for
Brian,
us to have this relationship.
If the only way for us is to be morally perfect is to allow an all-powerful God to make us perfect, then doesn't reason demand that we should do that?
Reason demands that this deity understand what it created and hold it to the standards of that creation, that of what it's able to do. It's like creating a child that can only jump 3 feet and looking at it saying, the minimum standard for me to love you is for you to jump 6 feet.
But right, Brian, he made us, he made human beings, and according to Christianity, human beings are in a fallen state because our first parents were without sin, they had friendship with God. They disobeyed God and lost those graces that allowed them to have moral perfection. And so we're born in this state where we can't climb out of it on our own, but God comes to say, I will help you out of this state that you are in. I mean, if I had a pill that you could take and you would never hurt another person again, wouldn't it make sense to you to say, oh, I'll take the medicine Trent's going to give me, instead of saying, why don't you just accept I'm somebody who hurts others? Why do you demand I take this medicine? It sounds like you're telling God he should just tolerate who you are, your faults, and if you hurt others, not saying, oh, I will accept the grace that you'll give me to be able to be better, to be what you want me to be. So I think that that's probably just the two different ways our listeners are probably going to have to look at this. And I'll leave it up to our listeners to see which one is more reasonable. But I am grateful that you called in.
Thank you very much, Brian, for that call. For those of you who are not religious and would like to share with us why you are not religious, 888-318-7884 is the number. Trent Horn is our guest, the author of many things and the maker of a podcast that I didn't mention. It's the Council of Trent is the name of his podcast. It's very popular, and you can find out all about it by going to TrentHornPodcast.com to subscribe. That's TrentHornPodcast.com. Anything interesting happening over there this week?
Oh, certainly. We're going to have several new episodes going up this week. Today, there should be an episode that has gone up about the end of civility. There was that video a few days ago about a pro-life advocate who got roundhouse kicked in the chest for being pro-life up in Canada. And other people, you know, in the news talking about how we can't be civil anymore and just the loss of civility in our culture. And I share examples from Scripture and the life of St. Martin de Porres about how we can be civil in the face of grave evil and threats, and how we need that to live in a functioning society. And then I think tomorrow I'm just going to have a fun interview with Jimmy about Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, and unicorns, and if they're in the Bible or not. And other bonus content that you can access at TrentHornPodcast.com.
All right. No, you didn't throw Yeti in there.
Yeti is another name for Bigfoot. There's also the folk monster that haunted the forest around where Jimmy grew up in Arkansas. I did not know. They had a Bigfoot-esque type creature there.
And and you lived in Arizona. Don't they have Chupacabra there? They got Chupacabra over there, I think.
Chupacabra is kind of like this weird alien demonic dog. It's very distinct from Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I beg your pardon.
Yeah, let's Trent Horn. We will do our special show on cryptids and cryptozoology maybe next week.
TrentHornPodcast.com. Go subscribe now. It's a great podcast.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
If there's one thing atheists and theists can agree on, it's the fact that we've all felt the problem of God's hiddenness and have cried out, "Where are you, God?" The difference, however, is atheists think this is a reason to reject God and theists don't. Why? Well, first, God is not entirely hidden. Sure, we can't know he exists by seeing or touching him, but we can know he exists through logic and reason. There's also good reason to believe God has revealed himself through Jesus of Nazareth. If Jesus is raised from the dead, then everything he said is true. Second, God's in-your-face presence wouldn't necessarily make things better. Even on the natural level, we don't like overbearing parents. Why would we want God to be that way? So while God's partial hiddenness is a mystery, it's not a good reason to embrace atheism. I'm Carlo Broussard with a ready reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
The Church has 2,000 years of wisdom to share on what it takes to live life gracefully.
We're so overwhelmed by how much our faith has transformed our marriage and family especially. We want everyone to experience the incredible gift that the Catholic vision of life and love really is.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak. Tomorrow morning, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. We're talking about why are you not religious? If you're not a religious person, we welcome that call. Why are you not religious? You know, I was struck when you were talking with Brian about the fact that as a Christian, I think we think of Christianity as an offer that God makes of help. But from outside of the Christian faith, I guess I forget that people look at it and go, that God seems so demanding, or he's just requiring all these things of you. I don't know. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I would say that God does demand, in accordance with the principles of reason, that we be rational, we act in what's good for our nature as human beings. Yeah. And so he is demanding, but not in a harsh way, just as we would say any parent demands or insists on what is best for their own children. So I think some people imagine that God is some kind of a capricious deity. He's someone who, through his own will, and maybe some religions or some Christian denominations teach this, that God caused us to be in this lowly state, directly caused it, didn't just merely permit it, for example, caused us to be sinful, and then judges us for that and condemns us, and then he gives us a kind of a mobster mentality: do what I say, or you're gonna, or I'm gonna really hurt you. But that's not the case. That sin is not something. So they treat it as sin is just something that God just kind of punishes because it breaks his arbitrary rules and it makes him grumpy. Rather, sin is just something when we act against reason, act against our own natures, what God intends for us. So when we sin, God gets upset about sin because it hurts the children that he loves. When we sin, some sins it's easier for other people to see. It causes us to become selfish, greedy, manipulative. We view other people as objects to satisfy our own urges and indulgences. So when we sin, we end up hurting other people, hurting ourselves, and making ourselves miserable. And God doesn't want that for us. He wants to elevate us above where our fallen human nature is. And the only way we can do that is not through our own merely human efforts. It's by uniting our human efforts with the grace of God so that we become more and more like him. So that God makes us an offer of salvation, God wants us to freely choose him, that God is love, and so God wants us to be free, because love involves freedom, to freely choose him and to become more and more like him. I think what's unfortunate, Cy, and you know what, maybe on another show we'll have a Protestant call in and we'll have a discussion about this. I think a lot of people view this because they imagine the relationship between God and us primarily as a relationship between a judge and a person on trial. And we're kind kind of a criminal in the court, and God is this kind of harsh judge banging the gavel. And so when we accept God, it's just like he bangs the gavel and says, you're not guilty anymore because I said so. Whereas Catholics view our relationship with God more as a familial element, like, oh, I don't know, he's our Father who art in heaven. And so the best illustration, I think, in the New Testament of our relationship with God is the parable of the prodigal son, that we, through our foolishness, break our relationship with God. But God always stands there ready to welcome us home to him and to restore that familial love that we have, for us to be his adopted sons and daughters, to become, and through his grace, to become more and more like him, so that we can truly be perfect and we can really be able to rejoice in him and appreciate it. It's kind of like if you show a piece of beautiful classical music or a classic film that is just wonderful to see, but someone is so mired in bad stuff, like they just listen to horrible modern music. I'm not going to pick a genre because I don't want to alienate our listeners, but you can just imagine they watch horrible music. They watch horrible movies, maybe violent, but even horrible movies that are just just saccharine and cotton, thin as cotton candy. And so when you show them like real good music or a really good movie, they say, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It was boring. I don't get it. And it's just because they're not in a place to be able to accept and see how beautiful it is. Because they're so used to bad stuff, they can't appreciate.
They're not ready for the good stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we have in our moral life. When we think with God about having a peace and tranquility with God and be able to act with virtue and courage and prudence and faith and hope and love in these saintly ways, people say, you're just a holy roller. You're so legalistic. Why are you so inflexible? To look at the saints who withstood, like in my podcast, I talk about St. Martin de Porres, who faced horrible racial prejudice for being biracial in the 16th century. Even fellow priests in his own priory made fun of him for being biracial, and people would spit on him and kick him. But in the face of that, he didn't show anger. He instead went to minister to them when these same people, when they had the bubonic plague, and then went to pray before God in the Adoration Chapel and was so lost in prayer that when the chapel caught on fire, he didn't notice. That's just someone who's just pious up in the sky. When you're so used to the bad and the worldly, it's just very sad. And so God has to do a lot of work with us, especially at the beginning of our spiritual lives. We have to see how bad the bad is before we can see just how good and beautiful the good is. At least that's my thoughts.
Preach it, Trent.
Now I got Tim Staples with me. Amen, my brother.
Well,
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You know, Tim Staples did not invent the word amen.
Is that what you're implying?
I think, well,
he's used it more than anybody.
Tim may not have invented it, but I think it fell into the public domain a little bit back, and he might have snatched up the copyright to that.
Oh, fair enough.
It's quite possible.
888-318-7884 is the number. I have been remiss in getting to callers. I'm going to correct that very, very shortly. Why are you not religious? Hey, if you're online, don't go anywhere. I realize that I have made you wait for a long time, but I'm going to get you on with Trent in just a moment. Trent is the author of Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. He is the author with Layla Miller. Look at how I said that. He's the author with Layla
Miller.
Thank
you, Sai.
Yeah, I finally credited you and not Layla. A book called Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. He's also the author of Persuasive Pro-Life. And, oh, we got a new intern on the video. I forgot to mention him. Zach, thanks. You're doing a great job. Brandon, the video guy, has been completely lazy today because Zach's doing the work.
This is Dr. Scott Hahn, and stay tuned for more Catholic Answers Live.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humani Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Pope Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. We asked five distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humani Vitae from five perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Tomorrow is the Feast of St. Gerard,
patron of expectant mothers and those having difficulty conceiving.
Join Take Two tomorrow to share your experience with having a child when told that you couldn't.
Now let's return to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you not religious is our question for callers today. Justin in Texas, listening to EWTN on Channel 130 Sirius Satellite Radio. You are up next. Justin, why are you not religious?
Hello?
Hi, Justin. Why are you not religious?
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm actually John in Portland. How are you guys doing?
Hi, John in Portland. I'm sorry. I had the wrong name. Why are you not religious, John in Portland?
Well, I'm not religious. I actually want to start off by saying that I was raised in a Catholic family at a Catholic school. And when I hear the word religious, I actually hearken back to the Bible verse in James 1:24. I might be paraphrasing, but I believe it says that religion, pure and simple, as God the Father accepts, is to look after the widows and orphans and to keep oneself unpolluted from the world. Are you guys familiar with that passage in James on religion?
That's right. We actually just quoted it earlier in the show. It's James 1:27, religion that is pure and undefiled before God and the Father is this.
Right.
But very good. Good to remember
so to
that.
Me, well, again, I was raised in the Church.
Sure.
But I developed a lot of theological issues.
Okay.
When I hear the word religious, that has a word with such a lot of baggage. It can mean spiritual. It can mean devout. You can be a Catholic and be lax, or you can be a Catholic and, you know, be religious, wear a habit, for instance.
Sure.
So what do you guys mean when you say the word religious? Because to me, religion as defined by the Bible, it actually sounds like it's based on works and looking after people who need it and sort of maintaining your own path in the world.
Sure. Let me, John, I think you brought up a good point here. First, this passage in James, in James 1:27, I don't think that it is defining what religion is, because it doesn't say religion is visiting orphans and widows in their affliction, keeping oneself unstained from the world. It says religion that is pure and undefiled before God is this. So it's a qualifier. In the letter of James, James is taking believers to task for saying one thing and doing another. He is not saying we should only do good works and not care about beliefs. That's the whole focus you read in James chapter 2 when he talks about the relationship between faith and works. And he's combating those who say, well, I only need to have faith, or, you know, I can just have faith. He says, no, a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. But he's not saying you're justified by works instead of faith. So when we see that here in James, we have to just understand James is talking about the importance of living out faith, of being a consistent religious person, not reducing religion merely to good works. So that'd be point one. Number two, I just define religion very broadly for the purposes of the show to be man's response to God. Religion is just how we as human beings respond to God. And I think a lot of people who say that they are non-religious, they don't really have any kind of active response to God in their daily lives. They might vaguely acknowledge that God is out there, but it's not something they feel the need to respond to. They probably rarely, if ever, pray, for example. So I'm just using a very basic definition to encompass all different kinds of religion that can be out there. And I'm just talking to people who just don't believe in the necessity of responding to God in any kind of way through prayer, worship, the confession of sins, going to church to worship God, things like that.
Right. As an atheist, I don't believe that there is a God to respond to. So when I hear religious, maybe the interpretation, and again, it's just probably a language difference between us.
Sure.
It's sort of how people view their position in the universe, how you view, you can view it as a sunrise or the birth of your first child. But I don't think that you can sort of start from a basis of religion as how you respond to God, because that presupposes that a God exists. Which, don't get me wrong, I understand that you do, but I don't see any evidence.
Well, no, John, let me jump in here, because I think there are many atheistic sociologists, or at least I think that there are probably several atheists who are sociologists, who are psychologists. I know atheistic psychologists who study religion, because you can define religion as man's response to God. Even if you don't think God exists, it's indisputable there are people who do, and they respond to him in various ways. Right.
Right.
So
but
the people...
Again, the idea of a God is not necessarily a testable... You can't test whether or not... So the psychologists, the sociologists that you're talking about, that do study religion, and again, I also studied that for a while in school.
Sure.
At a higher university.
Sure.
What is... The problem is that psychologists and sociologists approach the phenomenon of religion from an academic standpoint,
right,
without any theological baggage or ethical assignments to it. At least that's the way you're supposed to do it in academia. And what's sort of happening is, again, you're presupposing that religion as a phenomenon is a response to the presence of a higher divine power. And I would argue that religion exists as a phenomenon as a response to those really tough questions. Where do we go when we die? Where were we before we were born?
John, I would disagree.
Is
that
there good? Is there bad?
I would disagree, because that makes the definition too large, because you could define philosophy in that way. It's man's response to tough questions. I'm willing to give a definition for us to have a conversation and not quibble about the terms. So you could define religion. Religion is man's response to what he conceives God or the ultimate to be. So, I mean, people, I'd say the vast majority of people who are religious, who respond to God, think that God exists. Now, for you, if you think God doesn't exist, that's a very good reason not to be religious. Because, well, I'm not going to pick up the phone if there's nobody on the other, and make a call if there's no one on the other end to answer. That makes sense to me. Why you wouldn't be religious if you think there is no God, nobody answers up there. So I guess then my next logical question for you would be why you think there is no God.
Well, for one thing, every religion that offers its notion of what God, or even in some instance gods, plural, are, seem to contradict each other. To me, if there was a divine, a real divine power, it would make pretty certain that there were no errors in the knowledge it was transmitted to. For instance, John 3:16, everybody knows, God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten son. Mm-hmm. But then in Genesis chapter 6, we hear that the sons, plural, of God are coming down and copulating with human women and having children. And right. This was a major reason for the flood. So even then, the notion of the only begotten son, which is central to Christianity, is sort of tossed out the window. So to me, it seems that
There's
no God as defined by the Bible, because the Bible contradicts itself so much.
Or you could say the Bible appears to contradict itself, that anyone who reads or understands, tries to understand something, could find what they think are contradictions. I mean, somebody, for example, someone who's just learning about science, who reads a book on quantum physics or a book on evolutionary biology, might find what they think are contradictions. And then someone who studied the field more would say, well, no, that's not a contradiction, because these terms don't necessarily mean this. Even in the example that you raised, when the Gospels in the New Testament talks about Jesus, notice the qualifier here, the only begotten Son of God. So that shows that, well, Jesus is different. In fact, the very word son, to be a son of God, words can have different meanings. We do this all the time. I mean, when I talk about, use the word son, it could be used in a strict biological sense. My son is at home right now, maybe watching me on YouTube at this moment. I could talk about someone else, maybe someone I'm mentoring in apologetics. I might use the word son in a figurative sense, although I'd probably be a lot older before I ended up using that. So the Bible, we could see this different term. Someone might allege that there is a contradiction, but we could say, well, wait, let's look at the context, look at the language a little bit clearer. But I think when we say that if the Bible has a contradiction or not, we have to step back and answer a bigger question, which is, one, is there a God? And I think that's a question of philosophy, not one we get straight from the Bible. And two, did God reveal himself? And if Jesus is God and Jesus rose from the dead, then that gives us great confidence in the church he established, the Catholic Church, and in the Bible that the church has preserved for 2,000 years. And so do you see how when you look at the Bible, maybe God gave us something like the church to help us to understand it when there's parts that we don't get? Do you see where I'm coming from?
I see absolutely where you're coming from, because, in fact, you mentioned that sometimes even in the fields of science, biology, for instance, there can be what appear to be a contradiction, I believe were your words, and that as you become more learned and wiser to biology, you sort of begin to understand those contradictions aren't quite so contradictory, that there are rules. The difference between a theological debate or a theological theory and a biological or scientific theory is that everybody can perform the same test and everybody can arrive to the same conclusion. If God did exist, and if he was concerned, or she was concerned about preserving our everlasting essence in heaven for all eternity, then it seems to me like a really loving God would have, frankly, done a better job.
Well, Justin, let me ask you a question. Is it possible God has a good reason for allowing some people to not have the full truth that he's revealed about them? Is it possible God has a good reason for doing that?
Is it possible that God would withhold information from an innocent human being with the full knowledge on his part that human being would suffer in hell for all eternity?
That's not the question I asked. I just said, could God have a good reason for allowing some people to not have a full knowledge of him? For example, as long as God has a good reason for doing that, that doesn't show God doesn't exist, or that disagreements among religious people show that there is no God. I can think of one possible good reason right off the top of my head. God may want us, just as he wants us to have free will in action, so he allows moral evils for the good of free will in action, God might also want free will in belief. He might want us to be able to freely choose him or not. And so in order for us to kind of have more freedom to choose him or not, God kind of has what's called among philosophers an epistemic distance. He doesn't make his existence obvious to all of us. Otherwise, we wouldn't feel as free to come to know and believe him, at least in this modern context in the world we live in, because we'd always feel like he's literally right over our shoulders. And so if God does that and allows so that people can have freedom and belief, and he makes sure that no one is damned through no fault of their own, such as, for example, if God judges people based on the revelation they've received. And in fact, the Bible talks about that. Romans chapter 2, for example, God says those who never received the Ten Commandments will be judged by their conscience, the law written on their hearts. So if God wants people to have free will and belief, and he will not damn someone through no fault of their own just because they were born in a time and place where they didn't fully come to know him, then I don't think that there's any contradiction there. At least that's something I hope that you and the rest of our listeners will certainly think about, and I'm glad that you called in.
John, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very, very much for that. Got to remind listeners that right now we have the store-wide fall sale going on. You just entered the promo code CALIVE18 at shop.catholic.com to save 20% off hundreds of items in our online store. Visit shop.catholic.com and begin saving, and be sure to use the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I love listening to Catholic radio. It's perfect. It provides peace and it builds us up and strengthens us. We listen to it whenever we're in the car. My husband and I love it. He got me started with it before he even became a Catholic. He owns his own business, and so he's working by himself, and he listened to Catholic radio, and he's called in several times too. It's using the technology that we have for good.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Trent Horn. What Trent Horn?
I'm trying to think of a word to describe our new theme music.
How about awesome?
You know what's a word that, this is the word I would use to describe it because it does give me a sense of nostalgia. It feels very tubular.
It does feel tubular.
It's tubular.
Yeah, it's tubular, man.
Yeah.
That is totally tubular.
I would be sitting around playing Pogs and eating my Otter Pop listening to this. It's very tubular. And I had the greatest, when I was in the fourth grade, Cy, I had this eight ball slammer, and I owned every Pog on that playground. I was the king of Pogs.
Does anybody have even any interest in this whole studio to find out what
Pogs
find
out. Okay.
Okay.
Intern, what's up? Do you know Pogs?
Does anybody know what a Pog is?
No. You know what a Pog is? You know what a Pog is.
What's a Pog?
A Pog is like a little disc.
It's like a little disc. It was something that kids had and they traded and played for?
You used a slammer, and you would slam down on the Pog, and then if they flipped, I think either face up or face down, you would collect them, basically. There's different kinds of slammers that you had. And so, yeah. It's a tubular show. I always appreciate a little bit of nostalgia.
I like learning about those things that happened after I was a child, because when I was a kid, we just hit each other with rocks and sticks, and I'm glad that you guys had other...
The Stone Age must have been rough.
Yeah, it was a tough time.
That's why it's called the Stone Age, right?
Why are you not religious? That's our question of the hour. Trent Horn here to answer, well, to engage in conversation with people who want to share why they are not religious. Justin in... does this one I tried before? No, yeah, Justin in Texas, listening to EWTN on channel 130 Sirius Satellite Radio. Justin, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Thank you. Why are you not religious, Justin?
I find all religions that I've studied, and I've studied just about all of them, I think, by now, to be very short-sighted.
What do you mean by that?
I find when you look at all the religions across the board, and I'm not just talking about the current mainstreams. I'm talking about all the way back into history, going into Horus and Isis and so on, and Cthulhu and a couple others that I can't even remember the names of and I can't even pronounce because you get into that one religion, Mitha something or other.
Mithra?
Yeah, and you get into all that stuff.
Okay.
But the point that I've fallen into kind of a rabbit hole, and I believe, I find that I have faith in an all-powerful divinity.
Okay.
And that all-power divinity, when it first brought to me when I was a kid by a Christian pastor, he told me God was infinite,
okay.
God was all-knowing, and God was the creator of everything.
Okay.
Am I incorrect in saying that about the Catholic faith or the Christian faith?
All of those attributes can describe God, yeah.
Okay, perfect. So in that retrospect, after listening to the last two callers, I find the flaw, again, being brought to my attention that if that's the case and he wants us to have free will and come to him freely of our own free will,
yeah.
Then why is it that, and this is what gets me in all religions, is that why is it always that he's popping up over and over and over and over and over again? First, you know, through these other deities, and then now, and then through Jesus. And I believe that they're all representations of the same God. It's the same thing over and over again to bring people back at a trying time or a bad time.
So, why
is it that religions always make a finite God when they explain him? They always make it sound flawed.
Well, number one, I'm trying to understand the sense of your objection, Justin. Seems that you're saying, why are there other gods or other religions instead of just one religion everybody recognizes? And then two, you said, why are all these religions, why are their gods finite? First, I would say that there are other religions besides Christianity that teach that God is infinite. Judaism would be one. Islam would be another. Baha'i would be another example of that. Though it's no coincidence, I think, that they all kind of share the same spiritual pedigree, that Judaism in the ancient world was very unique in that it taught that God did not exist in competition with other gods, that there is only one God, that God is of unsurpassed holiness. And so God chose through time and history to take first a chosen holy people to help have them be witnesses of him to a kind of an ancient world, a smaller ancient world, until then the fullness of time when the circumstances were right for him to enter into human history. And then from there, his new covenant would be known to the whole world. And so it's quite amazing, actually, that 2,000 years ago, the vast majority of the world was shrouded in pagan darkness. It was shrouded in a world covered with with honoring of finite gods. But now, more than half of the world the majority of the world has come to know the true God. And the largest religion in the world knows that God revealed himself in the form of Jesus Christ. So I don't think the fact that people aren't 100% Christian right now does not say God does not exist. Other people intuitively can know that there is a God, and they grasp and reach for him and may come to think of God in incorrect ways. But those senses we have, I truly believe they do come from somewhere. I think they ultimately do come from him. So if you'd like more information on that and other topics, do check out our website at catholic.com. And I thank you for calling in.
But sir, you're not even answering my question.
I'm sorry, but I'll give it one more try. We have one more caller I do really want to get to who has been waiting for a long time. So I will try one more time to answer your question. Is your question, why are there so many different religions?
That's the lady who answered the call that sent me an email, and I will write my question down more directly as best I can.
Oh, that's a great question. Okay,
Justin,
get your email
address.
That's
fine. I didn't mean to push you off, Justin. It's just on live radio, we have just a chain of callers, and I'm trying to finish all of them before the end of the show. So I really am grateful that you called. And if you stay on the line, I will happily answer your question more in a direct email. So will that be helpful for you?
That would be awesome, and I would like to be as respectful to the other callers as possible. And I really love you guys' show. It's just I get frustrated in this rabbit hole that I go down when I go into religion.
That's quite all right, and I appreciate you called in. So stay on the line. Our call screener will get your email, and I can give you a lengthier response.
Justin, thanks. Hang on a quick second, and Marie will get your digits. Let's go to Nicole in San Antonio listening on Guadalupe Radio. Nicole, why are you not religious?
Hi, guys. Well, I used to be religious, but I gave up my faith almost a year ago now. And there's a lot of reasons, but I think the kind of initial reason that led it all was I came to realize that prayer was really a one-sided
Nicole, undertaking. I hate to do this to you, but it's sounding like we're talking to you underwater. Is there any way you can get closer to that phone or take it off speaker?
I'm kind of in a rural area. Is this better?
It is better, actually, yeah. Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I went near a window, so hopefully the signal's better.
Sure.
What I was saying was just I came to realize that I grew up very religious and actually converted to Catholicism for a few years before giving up faith completely because I came to realize that the prayers that I had been doing, there's really nobody on the other end of them. Anytime there'd been a prayer that I considered answered, I could really look back at it and see, well, it was either a decision I was trying to make myself, and the prayer was just kind of me talking to myself, thinking to myself, and working through it, and then finally making a decision. Or it was something that was completely out of my hands and was going to go one way or another, regardless of whether I prayed or not. And I think really that was true of other religious experiences that I had.
Okay.
I've had several really fantastic experiences during the time that I was Catholic, like locutions I'd set in Eucharistic adoration a few times and had some really great experiences. But looking back on those, it was really just my own imagination, which I was kind of slow to give up my faith because I found it sad, like I wanted to believe in God and an afterlife and all the trappings that come with it. But it was actually kind of encouraging to think, well, you know, even though it's sad to give up this idea that I've had for so long and that I wanted so bad to be true about God existing and looking out for us and planning our lives and so on, I actually kind of had to give myself more credit of, you know, all the times I've prayed and there's no one on the other end, I was still able to use that as a way to work through things and make decisions on my own.
Sure. Nicole, let me jump in here because the reason with Justin, you know, we had to cut his call short is because I saw you waiting for a long time and I was very eager to speak with you because you remind me a little of somebody I like a lot, me. I'm just kidding. You remind me a lot of, like, when I'm in prayer, and I talked about this, I think, in my book, Answering Atheism. A lot of my prayer, I don't feel like some people. I get jealous. I see them pray, and it seems like they have this deep, ecstatic, you know, their palms open, high up in the air, charismatic, and it feels like they're really feeling God, and you know, they're talking to that other person on the line. And I don't honestly, I rarely ever feel that in prayer. But I feel like that the grace that God has given me to help me relate to people who are kind of like yourself. Like you pray and think, well, I didn't hear a distinct voice from God. And I didn't see a miracle happen. I think that, you know, if I was to pray and ask God for something and he was to answer my prayer, I highly, highly, highly doubt he would do so in a miraculous way. That if I pray for something, it's going to be done in a natural but providential way. Providence is just another way of God organizing the universe so coincidences work for his good. And so you can take them and, I mean, if you want to, you can look at them and say, well, that's merely just a coincidence. Or you can take it and just as easily look another way and say, no, I think God has put everything together and I'm grateful for whatever he has put in my life, whether it's for good or for ill, at least in the short term, for me to see things from a different perspective or, you know, to grow in holiness. So I guess what's hard is that, like, when you say, number one, you said, I know there's no one else there. If you're praying, you don't really hear God, things like that. At best, wouldn't you only be justified in saying, I didn't hear God answer my call? Like, you'd still have to kind of put a question mark about what's on the other end, right?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny because I'm one of those people who have the experiences of, like, the charismatic with the palms open, and I'd sit in Eucharistic adoration and swore I heard him talking to me. Like, so, I was kind of on the other end of that.
Well, you sounds like you hit a little spiritual dryness. I'd like to chat with you a little bit more and maybe give you some resources because I would like to point you back to God, at least, even if you don't ask him for anything. Maybe just sometimes sit and listen to him. I find that helpful for me. So stay on the line, and our call screener will get your email. Please don't hang up. Give our call screener your email, I would like to continue our chat a little more, but I'm grateful you called in.
Thanks, Nicole. Marie will be with you in just a second, so hang on there. Thanks to all of our callers, and to you, Trent Horn, for two fine hours.
And to you, Cy Kellett, I didn't have to prove philosophy with a thought experiment that ended in your demise.
I really appreciated not dying on
you
today's
got,
show.
You got away in this episode.
Well, Jimmy Akin is in for 2 hours of open form tomorrow, so he might kill me. We'll see how that goes
tomorrow. I'll see him tomorrow. I'll ask him.
See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.